Welcome to Inside Remote.
Hi, I'm Andre, and you're listening to Inside Remote, a podcast where we share stories from remote work experts and remote companies who are building new era of distributed work.
This week, I had an interesting talk with Darren Murph. Darren leads all remote initiatives at GitLab, one of the world's largest 100% remote companies. What is also interesting is that he holds a Guinness World Record in publishing, which we're going to talk about in this week's episode. Darren is also an explorer at heart. Being digital nomad in his career, he has traveled in over 50 countries and all of 50 US states. He's passionate about enabling remote work for all and advocating for adoption. We covered many topics about remote work like traveling and working, to building culture in such big things as GitLab. To hear more, tune in into this week's episode and enjoy! Darren, glad to have you on Inside Remote.
Absolutely. It's a blast to be here. Thanks for having me.
What we start like from beginning for like a very interesting part is like you traveling around the world and working. When did you start to do that? Like when was your time and how did you get into that?
Yeah. So I started my remote career at Engadget. It's a consumer technology publication. And what ended up happening is I loved covering live events. So conferences all over the world, new product launches, interviewing founders of companies, things like that. It kept me on the road nonstop. And so when I started writing at Engadget, I was based in North Carolina, and it just quickly became apparent that as long as I could get to an airport, I could do my job. And so that job sent me all over the world to cover various things for the publication. And I fell in love with the travel that went along with it. And I found a workflow that worked for me where I could get a lot done while I was traveling. I was able to compartmentalize pockets of the day. A good example is just the cab ride from my home to the airport. I knew exactly how long that was going to take, and I could bucket certain categories of work into that time. So I would have a certain piece of work that I needed to get done that I would slot into that, which would buy me more time to actually enjoy the place that I was going on the back end. So you'll hear this with all remote people, but it takes a lot of determination and focus on self-managing your time. And that was really true for me. So work took me to a lot of places and I love to travel. My wife and I both love to travel. And so what I would recommend people do and what I did whenever work took me to a place, let's say Tokyo for the CTEC conference, I would tack a trip on before or after. So if I say, okay, look, I'm going to be in Tokyo for work, what's close to Tokyo that I've always wanted to see? Maybe before the show or after the show, I can add a connecting flight or hop on a train and see something else since I'm already in that part of the world.
Yeah, that's a really smart way to travel, especially like you said, for working, and then just like taking advantage of that and trying to check spaces around that.
Yeah. And I will say the other thing that I leaned on was internet redundancy. So this has become much more easy now. When I first started doing this, getting a jetpack with like a 3G connection was a definite luxury, and those speeds were so slow it was really inefficient to get work done, but I made do. But now we're in the world of LTE. It's easier than ever in the States with Google Fi. You can have a Google Fi connection, and for $10 for 1 gig pretty much anywhere in the world you can have internet access. So we've come a long way, and so being able to take internet with you is a big perk for remote workers and enabling that in various pockets of the world.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like even going further with 5G, that's going to be a whole new era, I think.
Agreed. Yeah. The thing with that is it's just going to open up new doors that aren't even possible now, especially on the video chat front. At GitLab, we try to use video calls as much as we can as a 100% remote team. That FaceTime that we get through video chats, it helps build empathy and it helps build human connection. That's really important when you scale a company. And once you have 5G, you'll be able to make video calls without the buffering and the stuttering that we're all used to now. And I think from just a human connection standpoint, that's going to be a game changer.
Yeah, I think so too. And even now, like I've worked a few times like from Asia, and it was really like a new experience like for me, let's say 2 years ago compared to like 7 to 8 years ago. They stepped over like one of the times when we were working with cables and doing the cable infrastructure and just like switched to LTE, and it was like such a step up. And like there's a lot of places even in Asia and like on remote islands where you basically can work pretty, like you have a pretty decent connection, like with the LTE, which is very surprising and not expensive as well.
Yeah, agreed. Mm-hmm. No, it's amazing. Technology and tools have come a long way. I mean, having Slack to be able to communicate asynchronously, having LG and leaning into 5G, it just makes things much more easy on the mobile device standpoint. Laptops now, their batteries can easily last 8 to 12 hours. I mean, it used to be, when I had a laptop that the battery only lasted 2 hours, you would have to take around a power port or an external battery just to get through a cross-country flight. So that has all changed, and it's made it a lot easier to work remotely when you're traveling. But I will say, a lot of people asked me after I left Engadget, they said, you know, how did you ever find the time to travel and work? And what they meant by that is, was there ever a convenient time that you were able to travel and work? And the truth of the matter is, there's never a convenient time to go travel and work. You just have to want it bad enough to make it happen. So for me, it was such a key part of my life to go explore new cultures, explore new places, and see things with my own eyes, that I would deal with the inconveniences of sometimes having to work at 3 or 4 in the morning, or sometimes having to work weekends to catch up with colleagues because of a long intercontinental flight. These things aren't convenient. The Instagram world makes it all look super glamorous, but it's not always glamorous. What I tell people is, it's not easy, but it's worth it. And so if you just wait for your life to open up this beautiful 2-week period where nothing's on your schedule and you can just go travel at will and work a little bit, it's probably never going to happen. You're just going to have to plan a trip, put it on the calendar, and then work really hard to make it work. But I still think, you know, you're gonna look back at some point in your life at all the meetings you took from one place, and you're gonna think, you know, maybe I should have made the effort to do it from Bali, or to do it from Japan, or to do it from somewhere else. And so if you have the means to do it and you have companions that'll travel with you, it's worth the effort. And look, when things go sideways, if you get enough distance from them, they all become good laughs in the end. So no harm, no foul.
Would you give any tips on like how to mix like traveling and working remotely? Like, is there like any things you learned? Would you say like golden rules about working remotely and traveling?
Yeah, number one would be try to have a redundancy in as many places as you can. It's not convenient to travel with two laptops, but it's really bad for one to die in a remote island somewhere where there's not an Apple store nearby to replace it. So traveling with a couple of phones, a couple of laptops, and definitely a backup internet source. It's really easy to rent internationally capable jetpacks now, so you can kind of bring your own Wi-Fi. For years, when I just relied on the hotel Wi-Fi, it was terrible, because if the hotel Wi-Fi ever went down, you were kind of stuck. So I would definitely recommend, if you're going to do this, you should bring your own internet source whenever you can, or look into getting a local SIM when you land. That has also become a lot easier. It wasn't always the case. The other thing is to just work with a team that understands remote. It's one of these things that people either get it or they don't. If you look at a colleague and you say, hey, look, I found a flight deal to Hong Kong in a month, so I'm going to be working from Hong Kong next month. And they say, wow, that's awesome. Like, make sure you try this restaurant. Or I know someone who's been there. Let me put you in touch with them. They're thinking about how much this will benefit you as a person, and not about, oh, this is going to interrupt their schedule because now they're in a different time zone, and how are they going to make this meeting work? You generally find people fall in one of those two trains of thought. And it's really difficult if you're working with a team that's so hard and fast on everybody being available at the exact same time in the exact same place. If you're trying to kind of steer and change that culture all by yourself, it's really exhausting and it's really tough. So it definitely helps to work, if you're going to work with a team, work with a team that understands remote, that's either all remote or remote first. Or if you're working with for yourself, make sure you are communicating back to your clients that this is what you're doing. And honestly, the results will speak for themselves. If you're delivering results at GitLab, we measure outputs, not the hours spent. So it doesn't really matter where you put in the hours. Go and be in a place that suits you, that fulfills your soul. You'll do better work once you're there. But communicating that back to your colleagues and clients is a big deal. Don't just, you know, hop 12 hours time zone and not tell anybody. Just set the stage of where you're going to be and communicate that.
Makes sense. There's a lot of, like, let's say, companies who are hiring remote first or like are hiring remote people. Do you see like that there's an advantage for people who are working remotely from one place comparing to remotely from one location?
It in certain companies, it's been a little more polarizing than others. I'll say one of the big benefits of working at GitLab, which is an all remote company. So 100% of our employees, even the executive team, were all remote. So when you have that level playing field, everyone is free to work wherever they want, and they are encouraged to travel, even if they work from a different place every week, that's totally fine. But if you're working at a company that's primarily co-located, so you have a bulk of the people working in a central office, and then you and maybe a small subset of others are remote, you definitely have to manage the perspective. And so I would definitely recommend not gloating about your global travels. You got to be sensitive to the fact that some people may not be as privileged as you, and they may have to have that commute because their job requires, let's say, hands-on with a certain piece of equipment that can't be they can't travel with them, that kind of thing. You just got to be sensitive to the environment you're in. But the thing that I found is people really appreciate when their colleagues are enjoying life and when they're thriving. Generally speaking, people want happiness for other people. And I've found that to be true. And so when I travel places and we're reporting back to co-located colleagues, I would position it in a way as like, here's where I went. Here are some tips. You should definitely go there. If you do this, don't do that. I kind of became a sort of a travel guide or a vacation planner for some of my other colleagues. And it's one of those things that you got to approach it from the perspective of not just bragging about it, but just giving both sides of it. Like, here's what I did. Here's some recommendations. Here are some of the challenges I had. Is there anything that I could have done better so that the next time I go on a trip, I make your life easier? It's trying to integrate as best as you can with people that maybe can't work remotely is really important. People want to see that you're going that extra mile to integrate into the environment and work well with the people.
Yeah, that makes sense. And like as you mentioned, it must be much harder, like working with co-located teams or let's say hybrid teams, which have like on-site and remote employees, comparing to doing remote first, what you're doing now at GitLab, right?
Yeah, for sure. So I would encourage people to look at the part remote section in the GitLab handbook. So we have an all remote section, and within there, you'll find a whole section on part remote and some of the disadvantages that come with that. It's definitely harder. But I will say, I've had a few roles where the role wasn't marketed as a remote role. And I applied for it. And during the interview process, I essentially had to prove my way and prove my worth and showcase that I've worked over a decade remotely. And these are the results that I've delivered and that you can trust me in this role, even though I'm not located at HQ. That's a lot of extra work on me or the job applicant, but I still think it's better than not having the option to work remote. So it's one of those things that, yeah, you'll definitely have some challenges if you're working with a subsection of the company that can't work remotely. But I still appreciate if companies are amenable to remote on any level. It's better than just blocking it out.
Yeah. So yeah, that sounds pretty reasonable. And like we were mentioning like before that you work in at GitLab. Like, is there I'm just gonna repeat it again. So I said it like you mentioned before that you're working at GitLab. So can you tell us more about that? Like, what's your role? What do you do at GitLab?
Yeah, so I'm the all remote culture curator at GitLab, and in short, I lead all of the all remote initiatives across the company. And so GitLab has been around for years, and people know them for their product, and they know them for the technical side of what they offer. But from its infancy, GitLab was built as a 100% all-remote company. And now we've scaled to one of the largest all-remote companies in the world. That part of the company is known, but it's definitely less known than the technical side of the product. And so essentially what I'm doing is trying to elevate the profile of that part of the company, because the all remote culture is extremely unique in the world. And we're pioneering a lot of this for the first time. A lot of people think that having 1,000 or so employees that work across 60 countries, across time zones with no headquarters is not possible, or it's not possible to be done well. And there's really not a manual that's been written on how to do it. And so in some ways, we're pioneering the manual and we're building the manual for other companies to do it. We believe that everyone can contribute, and we want as much of the knowledge that we're gaining to be available to all people. Personally, remote has had a massive impact on my life. About 8 months ago, my wife and I adopted a newborn son, and it was a situation where if I weren't allowed to work remotely, I could not have been in the place where I needed to be to see that through. So even our family has been created because I've been able to work remotely. So it's definitely personal for me. And I want to see more companies grow up and be built around all remote, because I know that I'm in the minority, and I know that this is an honor and a privilege to do this. And I want this for more people, and I want more companies to embrace it. And this will enable people all over the world to apply for jobs that would have been out of their reach if they were unable or unwilling to move to one of the major job centers in Singapore, London, San Francisco, those kinds of places. So part of my job is to raise the profile of GitLab and show people how we're pioneering all remote. But the other element is working with other companies in whatever way we can to help them warm up to the idea of building an all remote company. And look, it doesn't hurt that GitLab, the product, is an amazing code and project management tool for all remote teams. I mean, we use this tool every single day and it works well with a...
Yeah, I know a lot of colleagues and friends who basically use GitLab on a daily level, and they would never say it's coming from a remote team, like as meaning that it would be like a bad thing. Like nobody really notices that this product is built like as a distributed team, but definitely people notice the quality and use it. And that's really like a great showcase for... like for GitLab itself and the other, like the whole industry of companies building remote teams, I believe.
Yes, agreed completely. Yeah. And so whatever GitLab can do to be a part of the all remote ecosystem, we want to be there. It's been awesome to be supported, and now we're in a position where we can help support.
That's great to hear. Is like building GitLab and building such like cultural values and like everything about the remote work and the culture, is there like, would you say are there any like important values you have to focus on when building a remote culture?
Yeah, absolutely. So in GitLab's handbook, which is thousands of pages long and publicly accessible, you can find GitLab's values. And there are collaboration, results, efficiency, diversity and inclusion, iteration, and transparency. So those are our core values. And you'll notice that all remote isn't a value, but it's something that naturally transpires from embracing the values that we do have. And it's, if you look at results and collaboration, these are things that you need to focus on as a remote team, to not focus on things like what you wear to work or how many hours you sit in a seat or a lot of those vanity metrics. We are giving our employees permission to push those aside and focus on things like collaboration, results, iteration, transparency. These are the things that you have to have. Transparency is a huge one for remote teams. If you have people distributed all over the globe, you need to have an open line of communication to all of them, such that communication doesn't happen in small silos. And then you get people that aren't seeing each other face to face. And it starts to create dysfunction on what do they know that I don't know. You definitely want to avoid that. And so by having an open and transparent culture, everyone is assured of being on a level playing field on what knowledge that they have. So that's been big. I think another thing is what's awesome about having a remote executive team is that there are no hallway conversations back and forth to the elevator that the other employees miss out on. that just isn't a thing when you're all remote. When even the executives are remote and they walk the talk, everyone, it reinforces that everyone is on a level playing field. And I would say the biggest thing about growing and maintaining the all remote culture and all the things that go along with it for us is our vigor around documentation. And so what I've seen in past companies is they are built and born with a culture that forms early on when there are 10, 20, 30, maybe 100 people. But then as more people come on, and then as some of the early people step away, what you learn about the culture is just based on word of mouth and what's passed on. But the problem with relying on word of mouth for sustaining the culture is that things tend to get forgotten over time. And as bits and pieces are shared and then bits and pieces are shared, you end up with a very different message 2 or 3 or 4 years down the road than what the initial culture was. And so GitLab from its infancy has documented everything. That's why our handbook is over 3,000 pages long. Even the most mundane things are documented. And so when everything is documented and we onboard new employees, you're able to dive back into what was written years ago, sometimes by people that aren't even here anymore. But that knowledge that they brought is still there. So documentation is really big for culture. I think for any company, co-located or remote, but definitely in a remote company, it gives you this peace of mind that, okay, I'm starting work on day one from my home or a coffee shop or some Airbnb somewhere around the world. I'm not seeing anybody face to face, but I have this institutional knowledge that I can read over all of this documentation that will bring me up to speed, and I can start to understand the culture just by reading and listening.
Yeah, for sure. Powerful. Like, it makes total sense. And I've seen and read stories about there's a lot of issues, let's say for startups or early stage companies, which have problems with scaling up the team. So let's say as you mentioned, going from 5, 10 to 50 people, 100 plus to 500, there's a whole different culture. And it really, a lot of times it breaks the team once it scales past, let's say 20, 30 people. Because if you don't set up a culture and you have it written when you scale, not everyone have time to speak with CEO or other person. It's hard to get a vision. So basically, the closest you can get is your friend or a colleague you're working with. And if they if they cannot reflect the whole culture correctly as the CEO sees it, then it breaks whole culture building, and it might become a very big issue, especially if you're scaling fast. And this is where I see where remote teams have much bigger advantage than the on-site teams, because this is an essential thing you have to do from day one if you want to survive. It's not just it's not a plus thing, but you basically have to build it from the day one if you want to operate. Otherwise, it's very hard to do so.
Completely agreed. And Sid, GitLab's co-founder and CEO, has said numerous times that all remote makes you do the things that you should do in any company, but do them much earlier. And from a cultural standpoint, you're right. A lot of our culture was built in the first few months of the company's existence. But because those founding members were able to document it, even though not everyone can get on Sid's schedule every day, we can still see his words and his thoughts and his vision in the handbook because it's all documented. So every employee coming in 8, 9, 10 years later can still go all the way back to the beginning and get an idea of how that culture was formed. That's incredibly powerful. And of course, things have changed. The business world has changed. Things evolve, and iteration is one of our values. And so a lot of the handbook is iterated on every single day. But the actual core values and the core culture, you don't have to wonder how much of what I'm hearing today was still true X amount of years ago. You actually can read it for yourself, and everyone gets brought up in the same way. That's big. As you scale, there's really no other way to do it. I mean, when you're talking about 800, 900 employees, 1,000 plus employees, the only way to guarantee that everybody gets the same shake when they come on board and gets the same exposure to what culture looks like is to have it documented. Everyone has to be looking at the exact same thing. if you just ask some person to give you their perspective on it, everyone's going to get a slightly different answer. And to your point, that's when culture begins to break down.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, that's really like you really summed it up well. You were mentioning before, like regarding like communication and like how to have a written documentation, but like, is that enough for like such a big team? Like, how do you facilitate? Like, what are the other tools you use, like for communicating with each other, like to stay in touch on the project, etc.? What do you use?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Look, in an all remote team, or honestly, any type of remote team, informal communication is extremely important. These are the kinds of things that in a co-located environment, you'll just cross paths with someone and you can strike up a water cooler conversation. These are the bonds that build relationships and that hold people together as a work team. So when you don't have that, you need to be very intentional about enabling and creating an atmosphere for informal communication. So if, on GitLab's All Remote page, we have an entire section dedicated to informal communication. And a few of those things that we do is we encourage people to have coffee chats. So even in onboarding, we require that each new employee reach out to 5 total strangers and just put 30 minutes on their calendar as a get-to-know-you meeting. And we encourage them to reach out to people that aren't even in their department or their function just to get a broader view of the types of people that are working at GitLab. We also have things like a random room in our Slack channel where people are free to just chat about anything not work-related, whether it's sports or hiking or traveling or visiting each other, whatever it might be. This is where we can just be humans, not just work colleagues. That's really important to have a place where that's encouraged. And 4 days a week, we have an all-company call. And we have some days we have them twice a day so that APAC can be on one of the calls and then other regions of the world can be on the other. And we invite everybody to join. And it's actually a really magical thing to see hundreds of faces on a video panel all tuned into this company call. And we have a Google Doc agenda where people hand off to one another and they go down the agenda. And if you can't make it on a certain day, these are recorded. We operate asynchronously, so you can jump into the agenda and see what you missed. So it's not like one of those things where you have to be there at the exact same time to build those relationships. So we have more than that, but that's just a few. But look, you have to be very intentional about that because it's very easy for a culture to break down if you don't reinforce the need to communicate with each other. We can get really heads down in the work that we're doing and just an entire day goes by and we don't speak to anyone on the team. And we want to make sure that doesn't happen often because it's from an isolation standpoint and a human connection standpoint, we got to make sure we're
and
talking
do you
to
also
other.
Like meet in person, like at any time, like the teams or whole organization?
We do. I'm glad you brought that up. So every 9 to 12 months, we get everyone in the company together for, it's called GitLab Contribute, and it's this massive summit where all of us come together, all of us that want to or can, we all come together. So most recently, we were in New Orleans. We've had these in Greece. We've had these in South Africa, where we get everybody together for a week. Some work, but a lot of play, a lot of just getting to know each other face-to-face. And I got to say, it's amazing what a week of face-to-face will do. People that work in co-located environments, they can kind of get jaded by work travel. They kind of get jaded by seeing everybody all the time. So if you say like, hey, we're getting the whole company together to leave your family for a week and we're just going to go spend time together, they may actually not love that idea because they take for granted seeing each other all the time. But when you have an all remote team and you say, look, every 9 to 12 months, we get to travel somewhere fun. Everybody gets to get together in person. It's actually something we all write down in our calendar. It's something we really look forward to, and a lot of bonds are built in that week. So I do think it's extremely important to spend face-to-face time as much as you can. And another cool thing at GitLab is we have this visiting grant incentive where if you want to, on your own time, take off and travel around the world and meet and visit other GitLabbers, we will actually reimburse some of those travels to encourage that. So we've had GitLabbers that live in different countries go to other GitLabbers' weddings in different continents, and we've helped reimburse that because we want those bonds to be built. So we encourage it to travel and visit as much as you can.
Oh, that's so great to hear. Yeah, I think that's a really good incentive, especially like if the colleagues can like work, let's say, months or years together on the project, can see each other, like, and spend more than a week and just hang out, that like really, really helps out. Like, and like, even from my experience working on side teams, like, yeah, you don't appreciate the privilege of seeing people every day. But like when you do it remotely, like it's very great, like, to just meet in person and just go through, whether it's like work or just casual talk. It brings us something back, which we're like, let's say, missing or in a disadvantage of when working remotely.
For sure. And I'll say, you know, there are creative ways to build those bonds even when you can't see each other. So a good example on our marketing team here, every month or so, we try to get everybody that is able on the marketing team to join one video call. And we do this kind of show and tell session where everybody will show their webcam something that they built or something that they crafted or something that they're proud of, and then the story behind that. And it's amazing the bonds that can be built on a human level when you do something like that. So although we're sitting thousands and thousands and thousands of miles apart, we're seeing each other in real emotion on that webcam with all of the other people reacting at the same time. It's really special. And these are the kinds of things that you need to be intentional about putting in the calendar as an all remote team that you might not have to do in a co-located environment. So there are ways to kind of reenact that magic. You just got to be, like I said, intentional about it.
How much do you think it's important, like, when working remotely, is when having calls, like, to be like, to have video on compared to like audio only? Like, what's your take on that?
It's a great question. In fact, when I joined GitLab, I was not a huge fan of video. So I would try to take calls, conference calls or what have you, audio only. And my reasoning for that was it was more flexible. So I could more easily, let's say, go on a walk and take an audio call, because my physical appearance didn't really matter. So I could still engage in the call and I'm still getting some exercise and some fresh air. So in my mind, I thought, okay, the audio is the way to go because it's less inhibitive. At GitLab, we put a strong emphasis on enabling video as much as possible because it's the only way that we see other colleagues. And within about a week, I was totally sold on it. What I've realized is that the issues that I had mentioned earlier, they aren't an issue at GitLab because there's no preconceived judgment or notions about what you have to look like when you join a video call. So if you want to be on a walk and you want to be outside and taking a video call with your phone, no one's going to judge you that you're walking around a park engaging in the video call. So in a lot of companies, you feel like you got to have the lighting right, you got to have your hair right, you got to be wearing the right shirt before you jump on a video call. In an all remote team, none of that matters. Like, we just want to see you being you. We want you to bring your authentic, genuine self to work. And so, look, I've been on calls with people that are taking a call on a lakeshore, like in the back of a pickup truck. And after the call, they're going to go fishing. And that's an awesome thing, because now you get to engage with somebody they're being their true self, and they're definitely taking advantage of the remote work landscape. You know, it's a shame to be remote and then never go anywhere. Never leave, never do anything. So when you see people taking a call from a lakeshore or on a walk or something like that, it adds this creative spark to, you know, what could my life look like tomorrow? What could I do differently to inject some creativity into my day? And it's really cool. I really like that about the culture here. But again, it's something you have to be intentional about. We tell people from day one, don't worry about your appearance. Just be there. Bring your authentic self.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And I think, like, and I even read somewhere, but it feels like the same way. It's like, as humans, we're still visual beings, and even audio works nice, like, with most of the time. It's still like the human connection of just like being visual and seeing each other, like, helps to bring teams together, like people together. And yeah,
it does.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And it's also just, it's a more inclusive way to communicate. I mean, we have people on our team that English isn't their first language. And so being able to have visual cues and gestures, these are more universal, and it can really help connect people where they might not be, the English might not be their first language. So yeah, in addition to that, it's just more inclusive. And the other thing I love about GitLab is we encourage people to be the manager of their own time. So if you're in an hour-long call with 30 people, but your portion of the meeting is only 8 minutes, it's totally fine if you stay on the video and you keep an eye on the video and you check in every now and again, but you're actually looking at another screen, working on another project after your portion of the meeting is done. I really love that because it allows people to still stay in the video instead of feeling shameful that they're in the video but not looking directly at the camera. Yeah. I think I would rather have that and have people around and have that group than to just have people shut off entirely.
It's actually a very pragmatic way to do meetings. And like you said, I really like the no bullshit attitude in that case. As I've been in meetings before, and probably you've been as well, where people weren't present, like, and you would notice it, but people would judge it for that, or like they were just hiding it, like, but just being honest and open about it, like, helps the situation, which makes kind of sense. Yeah, why would you, like, let's say, lose another 50 minutes of your productivity just like being present something which wouldn't consider you directly?
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Yep, it's amazing that it's seen as so innovative, but when you think about it, all it is encouraging people not to waste company time and not to waste their own time. And it goes all the way back to we manage output, not hours spent. And the thing is, if you waste 45 minutes trying to pay attention to a meeting in 45 minutes that aren't applicable to you, that's 45 more minutes at the end of the day that you have to spend on projects that actually apply to you that you don't get to spend with your family, or you don't get to spend with your community, or you don't get to spend exercising or cooking or whatever it may be. And we just want to encourage you to structure your day for as much you time as possible, because the more of that you have, the better you're going to be at your job. It's a very virtuous cycle.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree.
But you know, when we have these video calls, we have to structure them that way, because if we just force people to look into the camera the whole time, even in for elements of the meeting that don't apply to them, it's a waste of time, and that actually would break culture down. So I love how we do it, and I hope more companies consider it.
Do you like use an agenda, or like how do you let's say approach the meeting of like, let's say, 7 to 8 people, or like 5? What's your usual like way of doing that?
We do, and I feel like a broken record to some degree here, but on the All Remote side of our site, we actually have an entire page dedicated to meetings. And the reason we do that is because so many people have asked us through the years, how do you have all remote meetings? How do you make them efficient? How do you make them not something that are hated? And so we have a meeting page on how we do it, and we hope other companies will take it and use it liberally. Mm-hmm. But it starts with meetings aren't the default. And so at GitLab, we try to communicate things in any other way other than scheduling a meeting. So a meeting is definitely a last resort. So that's good because we don't have very many meetings. So already we're off on a good start, because you give people fewer meetings, they're going to be happier. Now, for any meeting that does have to happen, every meeting invite has to have a Google Doc agenda. So if it doesn't have an agenda, you actually have permission to go back to the meeting organizer and ask them to add an agenda, or you have the right to just not show up. Because it's really not fair to ask someone to spend 30 minutes or an hour with you with no agenda. Like, you have no idea if this is going to be a good use of your time. It might pull you away from family or community. You need to know it's going to be worthwhile. The other thing about the agenda is it allows everything in the meeting to be documented. So anyone that could not attend the meeting live can look at the meeting invite, click on the agenda doc, and see everything that happened and catch up to the best of their ability. So that way, if there's another meeting on this topic, someone that could make the second one but not the first one, they're not coming in completely blind, where you spend the first 20 minutes of the second meeting just recapping what happened on the first. So none of this is like rocket science, but it's not widely used. And that's why we built a meeting page on it to hopefully encourage other companies to do it like this. And it's simple. It's simple. If everything has an agenda and everything's documented, meetings are a lot more efficient. And if you miss the meeting, it's not the end of the world, because the people that did make the meeting, it's their duty to document for those that can.
Yeah, well, I will definitely make sure to link to your handbook, like to put a link in your to your handbook, like in the notes.
Yeah, awesome. We love that, man. We love it. Look, we've learned a lot of things from other companies that have done this before us. And so we try to document as much of those learnings as possible to help other companies that are trying to figure it out. Because like I said, there's really not a guidebook. When you think about meetings, people just kind of do them the same way they've always had them, like from university right on up. And there's a very different way to do it now. People just need to pause and consider the tools and technology that would enable meetings to be less of a drag and less of a time sink. Mm-hmm.
Great. And going a little bit back to one of the discussions we had, like you mentioned that there's some people who are like who are non-native English speakers. What is the current distribution of the team? Like how many people you have, like let's say coming from US to the rest of the world? Let's say like what's the ratio, like roughly?
The ratio is actually on our site. It's on a team page. I actually don't know off the top of my head what the geographic split is. I know that we're up to almost 900 people now across almost 60 countries. Mm-hmm. Definitely the biggest concentration is in North America and Europe, but we have quite a few people in APAC as well. Mm-hmm. And so we definitely have people, I mean, from all over the world. They're on all the continents except Antarctica, and that one's probably coming soon. But we try to have a geographically diverse team. Diversity and inclusion means a lot to us, and it really matters with an all remote company because you truly have people that, you know, if you have a Silicon Valley company, it will naturally attract people that live there or are willing to move there. Mm-hmm. But here we have some people that have never been to or never planned to visit Silicon Valley. So they can't align with that culture because they've never experienced it. And we love that. We love that people bring geographic diversity to the team. So that's another reason why documentation is important and building that culture is important because it needs to apply worldwide, not just for 3 zip codes.
Yeah. And I can imagine that like when you're hiring new people, one of the things is, of course, the skill and the competence about the certain thing they will do professionally. And another thing is fitting into the culture of the whole team. And I'm wondering, like, do you have any example, or like how do you test that? Or like, how do you know like that people will fit in the culture?
Yeah, it's a great question. The cool thing about GitLab being as transparent as we are, most people that apply for a job at GitLab have done a lot of due diligence ahead of time. And so most of them have read our values. Most of them have read our employee branding section, and they look at what are the top reasons to work at GitLab. They've looked at some of the benefits that are there. A lot of people that apply have kind of opted into what we're about from a culture standpoint because the culture is laid out. So anyone can read about the culture before they even apply. That's pretty amazing. But if you're in a situation where they maybe haven't read that, or we're talking about a company that doesn't really publish much about their culture online, you do need to screen them in the interview for like, is this going to work? Is all remote for you? Are you going to be able to thrive in this environment? Because I believe there are many, many, many benefits to remote that far outweigh the drawbacks, but there are some disadvantages and drawbacks to all remote. And for some people, they may be more insurmountable than for others. So what we like to do is, obviously, if we're interviewing someone that's worked remotely before, it's pretty easy to ask for examples and case studies from their own life and past experience on how they delivered results and how they worked collaboratively with a remote team. But if they're coming to us and they say, you know, I want GitLab to be my first remote job. You know, I've been yearning to work remotely. I've worked co-located my whole career. It's time for a change. Most people still have instances where they were traveling for work a week or two, where they had a family emergency come up and they just needed to quote unquote work from home or work remotely for a certain period of time to deal with that. It's really rare that someone comes to us and they've had absolutely no experience getting work done anywhere but an office. So you can just ask them like, look, how did you get work done when you traveled? How did you get work done when you went to a satellite office? How did you get work done when you took some time to be with your family, but you still checked in? Almost everyone has those examples. And it's really about surfacing those examples and getting to the heart of why they want to work remote. Most people have a story. They need to be closer to family because they want to care for an elderly relative. We have some folks at GitLab that are married to people in the military, and their military spouse has to move every so often, and remote is one of the only ways that they can keep a steady career going on instead of having to start all over every time they move. Some people are digital nomads. We have people that have retrofitted vans and they want to live on the road and they're in a new place every single day. And the beauty of remote is all of those people are welcome here. And all of those diverse opinions and viewpoints and worldviews, they just make, it's just a more creative place to work when all of that is around you all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's very great to hear. Do you also have like any resources on how to, let's say, a lot of people who land the remote jobs are like had one or another way of experience working remotely, some for longer times, like full time, some, like you said, for travel or like visiting for, or like having to take care of somebody. Do you have any resources like or tips on how to start working remotely for people who haven't been able to work remotely like for a longer time?
We do. We have quite a few posts on the GitLab blog from people that have come to GitLab and this was their first experience working remotely. And people are usually really happy to share the things that they've learned and the challenges that they overcame. And so in situations like that, everyone is given an onboarding buddy when they come on at GitLab. And so if we're aware that someone is maybe nervous about being able to adapt to a remote environment or how do you get started, we will pair them with an onboarding buddy that's an expert in remote work. And they know all the tips and tricks of setting up an ergonomic home office. They know all the tips and tricks about engaging with your colleagues and setting up the right coffee chats and getting really connected to the community. So we lean really heavily on these onboarding buddies to bring this person into a comfortable place so that all remote isn't something that terrifies them, but something that they embrace. And we ask people when they interview, how comfortable are you and what do you want to know about it? What challenges do you foresee? And we plug in the right people for as long as it takes to make sure that they're in a comfortable place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really great way to help people to get into the remote work. And I'll definitely take in look into that and also share a link to that blog of people starting to work remotely, because like on the market there's like a lot of, let's say, job ads or even basically saying like job ads or job requirements, people having prior experience to working remotely. But it's a shame to let's say exclude all the talent which would have remotely pretty good, but they just haven't had a chance to do that yet on the full-time scale.
Completely agree. And honestly, what we've seen is that when you think about the value proposition of a job, people look at things like safety and security. They look at things like salary. They look at things like stock options. They look at things like their manager, day-to-day tasks. But when you have a remote role, it plays into that value proposition in a huge way. And so for somebody like me, the ability to work remotely is above all of those other things. It is the number one priority for me. And you'll find a lot of people that apply for remote roles, they place such a high degree of value on that freedom and autonomy that those are the people you want. You want the passionate people that really, really embrace the ability to work from wherever they're comfortable, because they're going to be really, really loyal to the company that allows them to do that. And we've seen that across GitLab, and I've seen it across other remote organizations that I've worked at. It's something that people wake up every day grateful for. We don't take it for granted. We can very easily look outside and see people packed on trains and cars, and they have to deal with a commute every single day. And we don't lose sight of the fact that being able to work remotely is a privilege. And you want those people working in your company because they're going to bring their best selves to work every day because they love the atmosphere that they're able to work in. It's an awesome cycle. And I would encourage more companies to not be nervous or skeptical about someone that has not worked remotely before if they express a true passion and desire to do it. Most people are happy to share what has changed in their life. that is leading them to a remote role. And that's how we connect as humans. Those are the stories that you want to know.
Yeah, I agree. It makes total sense. And like you mentioned, I think like a very interesting observation of like what I've also seen from my past colleagues and people like talking from being remote, they like importance of independence and having this power to like really deliver and depend on showing results, really make sure that people give their best in the time when they work. So it basically, they some work less or some they work more, but they really try to give their best like on the time they work at, because they know they appreciate, most of them appreciate their free time so much, they really want to like push like and be focused 100% when working on stuff.
Absolutely. When you're focused on results and efficiency, it's the kind of thing that we all celebrate if another colleague is able to get off of work, quote unquote, early and go do something with their friends or family or community, because that's what we all want. We don't want people sitting around in an office so that they're watching the clock and waiting for it to expire. That's not the right atmosphere. So yeah, all remote promotes efficiency because, you know, if you live and work where you want to be, it's as simple as closing the laptop lid and then immediately engaging with something outside of work that makes you happy. And that's a really powerful motivator.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And one thing, like, as you mentioned, like being a culture creator of like GitLab, is there something, would you say GitLab would set apart from other companies, like something unique about GitLab, if you would need to point one thing out?
The most unique thing I've seen is the transparency. And when I say everything is publicly available and available to everyone, I mean everything. It is incredible what GitLab publishes. I mean, we publish our quarterly goals and objectives. We published our roadmap on the march to become a public company. These are things that would just send chills up the spine of a lot of companies. But when you ask why, it just comes down to, well, we've always been trained to be scared of that, so we're going to be scared of that. But in actuality, being transparent and putting everything out there, it creates this culture where everyone is on the same playing field. Everyone has the same knowledge to work with, and everyone is marching towards the same goal. There's no silos where you don't know what's happening on this team. All of the objectives are out there for every team, and you can look at all of them. And that's, it's amazing to see how it's been embraced. Even as GitLab has scaled to almost 1,000 people, none of that has been withdrawn. And we continue to be very, very deliberate about being transparent. I think it's amazing. It just creates a culture of with no judgment. It creates a culture where people are free to be who they are and bring their authentic selves to work. And it's just, it's hard to imagine going back. It removes the bureaucracy and politicking that happens at almost every other corporation at scale. And it's a tragedy that that happens. At the core of it, I believe that all people want to be good to each other, and you just need that transparency value to give people permission to be open with each other. And that's been big for driving GitLab's culture.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Like transparency definitely helps a lot when building things, and like not even like at work, but in general. That's why it feels like so important, like you mentioned, and not seeing it somewhere. Like let's say that GitLab and you guys have definitely a privilege to live with it, like on the work place, and I believe everybody wants to strive towards, because in some cases it's very rare to see, and people are already used to not seeing that. But it's such a shame, because like it brings so much benefit.
Yeah, it does. It does. It just comes down to trusting and empowering your colleagues. And, you know, you'll see transparency thrown around as a value at a lot of companies, but then when you get in there, it's not truly lived out. And so I would just say, if you're applying for roles at remote companies or even co-located companies, dig into that. You want to work at the most transparent place you can find. It's awesome being in a place where you're just open and honest with all of your colleagues about everything. You waste a lot of mental cycles trying to figure out what to be transparent about and what not to be transparent about in most organizations. And being able to relieve yourself of that burden, it just makes your day a lot less stressful.
Yeah. And I'll give you just an example, because like I see like GitLab is such a big team, right? Like, and just having like a person, a sales person, like doing a culture curating like for GitLab, it's an amazing thing. But like, what would be your advice for, let's say, smaller teams, people who are just starting out, maybe have like 5, 10, 20 people? Like, is there like any difference, like how to nurture a culture, like for such a small team comparing to bigger ones? Like, what would be your approach to that?
I would say relish the time that you're small and start documenting everything right away. Don't push off the documentation. I know you're a small team, you don't really have the bandwidth for it, but the only way to ensure that your culture will stand the test of time is if you write it down now and then make iterations on it as you go. That will ensure that as you scale, as you hire the next employee, employee number 11, 12, 13, and so on, they'll be able to be brought up to speed the exact same way that the founding team was. That is how you build a super tight culture that scales. You have to start documenting at the beginning. So my advice would be, make sure you make time for documentation at a very early stage in the company. It only gets harder with time. As the company grows, more departments are formed, there's more to document. It becomes unwieldy if you didn't start already. So definitely document. Hire an editorialist, hire a former journalist, somebody that loves to write. They'll be your best friend. They can help with the documentation and probably some media as well.
It's a very interesting approach, like mentioning that. Having a person which would help, like, let's say founders or people like structure everything or just like write instead of them. Like, how do you see that like working with somebody like as an editor or like a writer?
Yeah, I think it's a natural next step. I mean, look, the media landscape has made it such that there are a lot of journalists that don't work in journalism anymore. And the skills they have are ideal for this kind of early stage, almost chief of staff type role where they're there as a documentarian and they can kind of look at the company zoomed out a little bit with a journalist's eye and kind of ask the right questions on, is this the right business strategy? Is this the right way to spend this amount of money? Is this the way we really need to be spending our next month? And in the course of doing that, they can also document what makes the company special. They can document the values. It's something that they're naturally inclined to do. Writers just have that natural inclination to document and to ask questions. And then, of course, most editors also have other skills that can translate, particularly to communications and marketing. And so as your company grows and you need to communicate internally more formally, when you need to communicate with the media and you need to engage in PR tactics, that's a natural fit for them. The other great thing about journalists is that most of this can be done, well, I'd say all of this can be done remotely. And journalists, it's a big bunch of folks that really embrace remote work from the get-go because we've been writing on laptops, not in an office, for decades. So it comes pretty naturally to the journalist mind.
And coming to the journalism, there's like one very interesting thing about you being a Guinness World Record holding journalist. Like, can you explain more on that part?
Yeah, sure. So I joined Engadget at an amazing time when consumer technology was really exploding. It went from a niche to kind of a general, it just became part of the national fabric and the global fabric. I think when the iPhone launched, it was kind of the big precedent setter for consumer technology is now everywhere. So I was on a small team at Engadget. I love to write. I definitely found my passion. I was a fast writer. I was a passionate writer and created a lot of workflows to help me write more efficiently. And the world record is the world's most prolific professional blogger. So another way to say that is I wrote a lot in a really short amount of time. So when the record was bestowed, I had averaged publishing an article every 2 hours, 365, 24/7 for four Wow. straight years, which is insane to think about now. It was about 6 million words, over 17,000 articles in about a four-year span. And I've kept writing, of course. So I'm up to almost 30,000 articles now. And I think the word count's over 10 million or something at this point. But, you know, I attribute it to a few things. One, I found my passion. I loved writing. I love technology. And the other thing was I was in a remote team that really supported me and that had amazing tools to make my job as efficient as possible. And I tell people there's no way I would have had that record if I had to commute an hour or two each way every single day. I mean, over the course of 4 years, you do the math, you're wasting days and weeks and months of your life doing nothing. So being in a remote setting definitely contributed to creating the atmosphere where that record was achieved.
That's really astonishing. I mean, it's beyond my understanding. Like, it's a really like a big chunk. Like, do you have any advice of like for us who are not writing articles but would like to, let's say, write specs or something else for the company, like, and make it like faster? Like, any tips and tricks?
I would definitely investigate any possible software tools that are out there. So what I did on a regular basis, I would just investigate what new software has been launched this month. Is there a writing tool? Is there a keyboard shortcut mapper? Is there anything that came out that can make my job faster or more efficient? Honestly, it was about cutting out milliseconds. When we worked in WordPress, we had a developer that we took this one thing that we had to do every single time we published a post, and it took about 6 seconds, and it drove me crazy. And so I worked with him to get that down to about 1.5 seconds. And my reasoning was, with the team of 50 people doing this 100 times a day, it won't take long before this saves us massive amounts of time. And so it's one of those things that you have to be a little obsessive about it and look for ways to trim seconds, because seconds end up mattering. The other thing is just creating an environment where you can focus. A lot of people don't put too much time and thought and effort into what their home office looks like or what their mobile office looks like, but spend a lot of time with that. You know, play around with different mice or input peripherals, different keyboards, different operating systems, until you find the one that really suits you. Play around with the configuration of your desktop. These are things that don't just be satisfied with the default. Play around with them and tinker with them and try to find what suits you best. I spent a ton of time just optimizing my workplace, and it was a lot of just trial and error. But now with so many forums about remote workers, there's entire Reddit sections devoted to this. You can get some really good tips from people.
Yeah. I'm very thankful for advices, and I'm quite sure that like a lot of people will take an inspiration and try to find the hacks around it. And coming to the apps, like, do you have like a favorite like apps or like a stack you use for like your remote work?
It depends. It's changed a lot over the years. When I was in editorial, there were a few apps that I used that helped me focus on writing. One of the biggest, I don't even know if this plugin still exists, but at the time, it was a huge time saver. And essentially, it was this plugin that would put a Word document at the bottom half of a Chrome tab or a Firefox tab. So the top half, I'd be looking at the web page that I was referencing, and then the bottom was space for writing. So this was huge because I didn't have to alt tab to a Word document and then back to the web browser and then back to the Word document. So that was huge, but that's not going to help someone that doesn't work in editorial. So it just comes down to thinking about what could make your job better and easier, and then figuring out a way to Google it in a way that will surface tools that will help you. That's the biggest tip I have, is think about what frustrates me right now about my job. What do I wish would happen more quickly? What is taking more time than I think it should? Most problems have been at least thought about, if not solved. And if you just figure out the way to Google it, you can be turned on to some, sometimes even open source software that can help you solve that. Now in my role at GitLab, I spend a ton of time in GitLab issues and a lot of time writing in Markdown. And writing in Markdown was actually new for me. So I jumped on this new text editor called Typora for Mac. The thing I love about that is you can input text in either Markdown or just conventional type. And then with one click, you can see what it will render as in Markdown. So you're able to proof your work before you actually ship it to the web, which is really awesome. So that's another instance where I'd never heard of Typora, but I just did some Googling on best Markdown editors, and I tried about 6 or 7 until I found one that had the tools that I like.
Great. Darren, I think we're running out of time. I'm very thankful to have you on Inside Remote. It has been a pleasure to talk with you.
Absolutely. This has been a blast. I really hope it's been useful, and I'll be sure to include the link to our all remote section at GitLab. A lot of that comes from my personal experience, and hopefully it can be useful to those working remotely or who want to work remotely, or even founders that want to start an all remote company. We're happy to help in any way we can.
Great. Is there any place that people can reach you?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at Darren Murph and Instagram at @Darren_Murph.
Darren, thanks again for joining me on Inside Remote. If you like this episode and you like Inside Remote, you can subscribe in your favorite podcast app to make sure you don't miss another show. Also, you can find us on Twitter at Inside Remote. For the last, we have a small favor to ask. If you like Inside Remote and you like this episode, please give us a review on your favorite app, since this will help us spread the word about Inside Remote. Thank you.